Am I on, Danny? Yeah? You hear me all right? Okay, morning. So today's talk is from Mark chapter 8, and it's about journey and identity. But first, though, I'm going to show you an image of a woman, and I want you to guess how old you think she is, okay? So if you've seen this before, then please sort of keep quiet and let other people have a guess. So here's the woman. So shout if you've not seen this before, shout out, how old do you think this woman is? Any numbers? Come on. 21. Anyone else? 90? 80? 12? So we've got quite a range between 12 and 90. You're not sure that's a woman? Okay. Fair enough. It is just a sketch. So it's quite a range. Some of you are saying very young, and some of you are saying very old. Can anyone that sees it as very old, can you see that it's very young? Okay. So, slight optical illusion. There's two images here, okay? If you've not seen it before, there's two women. So there's an old woman. That's her nose there, and that's her mouth and her chin. You see that? And then there's a young woman. The young woman is facing away. That's her nose and her eye there, and that's her chin there. Yeah? It's an old image. Many of you would have seen it, I expect. But it's interesting that you were all looking at the same thing, but you came to very different conclusions. Okay. So we've been on a journey in recent weeks, looking through the first 8 chapters of Mark. And next week, actually, is the last talk in the series. So I thought it would be helpful to just sort of step back a bit and look at a bit of an overview of Mark as a timeline of the journey that the disciples have been on to this point. And look at some of the sort of events from the first 8 chapters about journey and identity. So to start with, who is Mark anyway? So he's the author of this book. His fuller name is actually John Mark. He wasn't one of the 12 disciples, but he knew Peter well, and he travelled as a helper with Paul and Barnabas on their first missionary journey. So that's just a little bit about Mark. So let's have a look at the timeline, just of the first 8 chapters, and we'll go through some of the events. I'll research this a little bit and got some approximate dates. So these are rough dates for Jesus, Mark, and Peter. So the estimate is that Jesus was actually born around 5 BC, so 5 years before himself. I guess technically that's his first miracle, but I don't know about that. But just to explain that, it was actually in the 6th century that the AD-BC system of dating was established. And back then, their best estimate of when Jesus was born was what they called 1 AD. But then after that, it was realized Jesus would have been born about 5 years earlier than that. And it's because they determined that Herod died in what they called 4 BC. So Jesus must have been born 1 or 2 years before that. Okay, a bit confusing, but that's roughly when Jesus was born, about 5 BC. And then there's sort of various chronologies. The life of Jesus is sort of studied, and you put the time in there, and that suggests he was baptized and called his first disciples around 26 AD. So then he would have been about 31. And then he died when he was about 35. So these are approximate dates, give or take a year. So then Mark, it's estimated he was born about 5 AD and died about 68 AD. And it's generally believed that he wrote his gospel in that period around 55 to 65 AD. Okay? And then we have Peter, who appears in our passage for today. He was born about 1 AD, it's estimated, and died about 66 AD. So it's interesting, you look at those dates, and there's a big overlap between them. They're approximate dates, but there's a big overlap there. And you can see that even though Mark, he wasn't one of the 12 disciples, but he was alive at the same time, he may well have even heard Jesus preach. We don't know for sure. And there are references to Mark in the book of Acts, where he journeys with Peter and Paul and Barnabas. Okay, so that's a bit of an overview. So let's focus in then on the 3 to 4 years of Jesus' ministry described by Mark when the disciples were journeying with him. Now, there are lots of occasions when the identity of Jesus is even named or it's questioned. And here are some of them as examples. In chapter 1, impure spirits refer to Jesus as the Holy One of God. Jesus forgives sins. Only God can do that. Jesus says he is the Lord of the Sabbath. Other impure spirits call Jesus the Son of God. But the disciples are struggling to take it all in. Jesus teaches them in parables, in stories, but their understanding is limited. Then in chapter 4, Jesus calms the storm, and the disciples say to each other, "Who is this? Even the wind and the waves obey him." Who is this? Now, this event in Mark 4 is estimated to be the autumn of 28 AD. So the disciples had been journeying together with Jesus for about 2 years by this time. So 28 AD, it's about 2 years in, okay? And the disciples had seen many things, many healings. They'd seen Jesus cast out demons. They presumably heard the demons declare that Jesus is the Son of God, the Holy One of God. They'd witnessed Jesus forgive sins, refer to himself as the Son of Man, Lord of the Sabbath. And yet, after 2 years of journeying with Jesus in close fellowship, day by day, they still didn't know who Jesus was. Who is this? Again, we see in Mark 5 that impure spirits knew exactly who Jesus was. They refer to Jesus as the Son of the Most High God. The miracles continue in chapter 5. Jesus restores a demon-possessed man, heals a sick woman. He raises a girl from the dead. Jesus continues to perform miracles, and he teaches with incredible wisdom. Then in Mark 6, in a similar way to today's passage, we read that there's speculation over Jesus' identity. So this is from Mark 6. Some say that Jesus was John the Baptist, or maybe Elijah come back somehow, or a prophet. Elsewhere, people say that Jesus had come back as Jeremiah. Jeremiah had come back as Jesus, something like that. And then there's other options. Maybe he was just a liar. Maybe he was a madman. Or just a good teacher. You hear that a lot. Or maybe actually he didn't even exist. So to try and sort this out, I thought we'd have a little game of guess who. Do you remember the kids' game where you flick down the thing? Has he got a beard? That'd be most of them would come down. So guess who. Okay, firstly, it seems odd to me that some thought Jesus might be John the Baptist, raised from the dead. when John and Jesus were alive at the same time. I mean, they're actually cousins. Now, some manuscripts say that Herod was saying this. Herod was saying, maybe Jesus is John the Baptist come back. And Herod was the one, if you remember, that had John killed. So maybe that's his way of dealing with the guilt. So I think we can rule out that Jesus was John the Baptist. Now, Elijah gets mentioned in various places. The Jews knew of a prophecy from Malachi regarding Elijah, that he would return somehow. It says in Malachi 4, I will send the prophet Elijah to you before that great and dreadful day of the Lord comes. So they were looking for that. They were looking for Elijah returning. So maybe Jesus was Elijah. But that's not the case. We see elsewhere, Elijah actually returned as John the Baptist, preparing the way from the Lord. And that's clear from Luke 1, where it says, John the Baptist will go on before the Lord in the spirit and power of Elijah. And in fact, Jesus also confirms it in Matthew 11. So Jesus wasn't returning as Elijah. So was he just another prophet? Well, it's clear from many different references that Jesus claimed to be God, not just a prophet. So that doesn't seem to be an option. So we can rule out prophet, and we can rule out he was Jeremiah. Now, I think if you ask people on the street today about Jesus, I reckon many people would say either he didn't exist or he was just a good teacher. Well, no serious historian doubts the existence of Jesus. As one scholar of ancient manuscripts puts it, if we believe what the best sources say about Julius Caesar, then we should believe what the best sources say about Jesus Christ. He was an historical figure. There's no doubting that. So we can rule out he didn't exist. Was he just a good teacher? Well, he claimed to be God. So if he got that wrong, what else did he get wrong? He can't just be good. So we can get rid of that. Jesus claimed to be God. What do we do with that? C.S. Lewis developed what he calls the trilemma. Now, a dilemma has two options, but here with a trilemma, there are three options. Jesus claimed to be God. Either this was false or it was true. Now, if it was false, then either Jesus knew it was false or he didn't. If he knew he wasn't God, then he was a liar. So why didn't he just save his own life? Would he be prepared to die for a lie? Now, if he didn't know that he wasn't God, then he was deluded, he was psychotic, a madman. A madman that was full of wisdom, grace, gentleness, and consistent teaching that was able to confound the wisest of the teachers of the land? That doesn't seem likely. So the only option left in the trilemma is that he claimed to be God and that it's true, which means he's Lord, he's the Messiah. So back to guess who? We can rule out liar and madman, which just leaves Messiah. In chapter 6, the miracles continue. The feeding of the 5,000, walking on water, more healings, driving out more demons. Then in chapter 7, after talking in parables, in stories, Jesus says to the disciples, "Are you so dull?" In Mark 8, they are struggling. They're still struggling. "Do you still not see or understand? Are your hearts hardened? Do you have eyes but fail to see, and ears but fail to hear? Now, is it just me, or do you get the feeling that Jesus is getting a little bit frustrated with the disciples by this point? Are you so dull? Do you fail to see, fail to hear? Now, the disciples have been journeying with Jesus for about 3 years by now, by Mark chapter 8, 3 years in, and they still don't get it. They don't understand Jesus' identity. But why? Why could they not see what was right in front of them? Remember the image of the woman at the start? Some of you saw it one way, some of you saw it a different way. And you only saw the truth when your eyes were opened for you. The demons knew who Jesus was. The characters of faith that we've heard about in the first 8 chapters of Mark believed in Jesus. A woman in chapter 7 referred to Jesus as Lord, but the disciples are struggling. Luke puts it like this in chapter 18. The disciples did not understand any of this. Its meaning was hidden from them, and they did not know what he was talking about. So there seems to be something spiritual going on here. The truth is being hidden from them. So now we come to our passage for today. That was the introduction. The sermon starts now. So we're just going to read, Daz is going to come up and read the passage, which is Mark 8, 22 to 30.
They came to Bethsaida, and some people brought a blind man and begged Jesus to touch him. He took the blind man by the hand and led him outside the village. When he had spat on the man's eyes and put his hands on him, Jesus asked, "Do you see anything?" He looked up and said, "I see people. They look like trees walking around." Once more, Jesus put his hands on the man's eyes. Then his eyes were opened. His sight was restored and he saw everything clearly. Jesus sent him home saying, "Don't even go into the village." Jesus and his disciples went on to the villages around Caesarea Philippi. On the way, he asked them, "Who do people say I am?" They replied, "Some say John the Baptist, others say Elijah, and still others, one of the prophets." "But what about you?" he asked. "Who do you say I am?" Peter answered, "You are the Messiah." Jesus warned them not to tell anyone about him.
Thanks, Daz. So some people bring a blind man to Jesus. Notice a touch from Jesus is all that they want. They don't actually ask Jesus to heal him as such. They just wanted to touch him. Their faith is such that they believe a touch is enough to heal him. And they're right. There have been occasions when just a touch from Jesus, or even someone just touching his cloak, has resulted in healing. But not this time. Notice Jesus took the blind man by the hand. He touched him, but that doesn't heal him. Jesus wants to do this healing another way. Also, note that Jesus leads the blind man out of the town, out of the village. Why did he do that? I can't think of another time that happens. He just heals people where they are. Jesus had actually performed miracles in Bethsaida before, but the town was unrepentant, as we read in Matthew 11. So maybe Jesus didn't want to demonstrate his power in that town anymore. they will not see the truth and therefore shall not see. Now, I counted up the number of individual miracles referenced in Mark's gospel by this point, and I make this one the 15th miracle recorded in Mark. Plus, also in Mark 1, there is a statement that Jesus healed many others at that time, and he also drove out many demons, so there were lots more than 15. But by this stage, 3 years into his ministry on earth, he was nearing the end of performing miracles. Earlier in chapter 8, when the Pharisees asked for a sign, Jesus sighed deeply and said, "Why does this generation ask for a sign? Truly, I tell you, no sign will be given to it." After this healing of the blind man, there are just 2 more miracles recorded in Mark before Jesus dies. No more signs. Another question is, why use spit on the man's eyes? Seems a bit weird. This has echoes to me of the salve, the ointment that is referred to in Revelation 3. The Laodicean church were spiritually blind, but they did not realize they needed salve, an ointment on their eyes, so they could see. Now, another curious and I think unique aspect of this healing is that it takes place in stages. Why is that? He's not healed straight away. And we don't know for sure, of course, the Bible doesn't explain that. And there's lots of speculation about the reason. Now, what we do know is that Jesus did not make a mistake. What we do know is that he could have done it in one go. So doing it in stages was deliberate. But why? Maybe to illustrate something? But what? And why at this point in the disciples' journey? Now remember, just prior to this passage for today, Jesus says to the disciples, "Do you have eyes, but fail to see?" Then he heals a blind man in stages. I don't think that's a coincidence. Jesus was demonstrating his power, his identity, and providing a physical metaphor for the spiritual act that's needed. The disciples had seen healings before, including a blind man. But now, something shifts, something changes. Peter sees with eyes of faith. He declares for the first time that Jesus is the Messiah. He is Lord. He is the higher power. He is God. Peter starts to understand, in part. He's not completely blind to the truth about Jesus anymore, but he doesn't get it fully. As we'll hear next week, at the end of chapter 8, Jesus predicts his death and resurrection. But Peter pushes back, not realizing what's needed, and Jesus rebukes him for getting it completely wrong. For now, we see through a glass darkly, but then face to face. Now I know in part. Peter knows in part. He sees in part. He was completely blind to the truth about Jesus in Mark chapter 4 when the disciples say, "Who is this?" But now, in chapter 8, a year later, he starts to see the truth about Jesus' identity. "You are the Messiah." His understanding is still confused, though. He sees men as trees walking. He sees Jesus as the Messiah, but doesn't appreciate what Jesus needs to do to die and be raised back to life. Peter was on a journey, as we all are. He is slowly understanding. His eyes are being opened to the truth. As Matthew Henry puts it, like the light of the morning, it shines more and more to the perfect day, and then we will see all things clearly. And from Proverbs chapter 4, the path of the righteous is like the morning sun, shining ever brighter till the full light of day. This is a journey of gradual revelation. Just as with the blind man and the disciples, our eyes are being opened gradually. And it's the Spirit that leads us into more and more truth. He guides us on the journey. But when He, the Spirit of truth, comes, He will guide you into all the truth. It's the Spirit that opens our eyes. He is what we need to see more truth about Jesus. But it is a journey. It doesn't happen all at once, as we read in Romans chapter 1. This gospel unveils a continual revelation of God's righteousness, a perfect righteousness given to us when we believe, and it moves us from receiving life through faith to the power of living by faith. So the Christian life is a journey of faith. It starts with salvation, the gift of saving faith, and we receive life through faith. Then it continues as a journey of faith, living by faith, as we trust and believe in God more and more. Our journey is like the disciples. It's a continual revelation about God as He gradually opens our eyes. So we need ever-increasing faith. Faith, as we heard earlier, is described in Hebrews 11. Faith is confidence in what we hope for and assurance about what we do not see. The disciples were so human, troubled by doubt, fear, anxiety, just like me, just like you. But faith is the absence of these things, the absence of doubt, the absence of fear, the absence of anxiety. Think back to some of the examples of people of faith we've heard about in Mark. Chapter 1, a man with leprosy begs for healing. Chapter 2, men bring a paralyzed man, believing Jesus can heal their friend. Chapter 5, Jairus believes Jesus can heal his daughter. Chapter 7, the woman believed her son could be delivered from a demon. And in our passage today, the people that brought the blind man to Jesus believed he just needed Jesus to touch him to be healed. That is faith. It took faith, confidence in what they hoped for. They believed in Jesus, believed he could help them, that he could perform miracles. We need our eyes to be open to the truth about Jesus, to have this faith. So finally, consider the disciples walking along the road to Emmaus after Jesus rose from the dead. They didn't recognize Jesus at first. They needed their eyes opening. So, where are you? Where are you on this journey of faith, of seeing the truth about Jesus? Are you moving towards him or away from him? Or are you in neutral? Are you just starting out on the journey, or have you been journeying with Jesus for many years? If you are just starting to seek, then the key question is, who do you say Jesus is. When we read the Bible, there is no other option but that he is claiming to be God. He is saying, I am the higher power. So do you believe him? Or is he a liar? Or a madman? If you've been journeying for many years, how is that going? Are you full of life? Full of joy and hope? It's not quite what I'm seeing this morning, but never mind. But if you are, that's great. Carry on in the journey of faith. Or are you struggling in the journey? Maybe stuck in a bit of a rut, discouraged by sin, not seeing much change. One bit of wisdom I heard recently is live in the day, measure by the decade. The Christian journey is lifelong. If we compare ourselves to last week or last month, it can be discouraging, like we're not getting anywhere. But try comparing yourself to how you were a decade ago, and hopefully you can see then how your faith has grown. The disciples journeyed with Jesus, and they discovered his true identity as their eyes were opened. That's our journey as well. Wherever you are on the journey of faith, if there's one thing that you do as a result of this talk, just simply cry out to God and ask him to open your eyes to some more about the truth of who Jesus is. Let's pray. First, a verse from Hebrews 12. Let us keep looking to Jesus. He is the one who started this journey of faith, and he is the one who completes the journey of faith. Jesus, thank you for the truth that you are God, you are the Messiah. Open our eyes to your truth. Complete our journey of faith. Amen.